Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
The Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions. Eagles fans everywhere, this is for you. Let the celebration begin.
Remember, the Eagles have a head coach. They have a defensive coordinator, offense. This is starting to come together here.
Yeah, it's taking shape quickly. And Nick Sirianni had some pretty clear thoughts about how to put a staff together. I'm sure that was a big part of the conversation with Jeff Lurie and Howie Roseman, and starting to take shape.
It is. This is the Eagle Eye Podcast with Ruben Frank. I'm Dave Zangaro.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're going to take a look at every name we know so far. It's obviously going to be added. We don't have all the names on the coaching staff, but I guess we should start off by saying the Sirianni hire is official. 3 days after we knew it, they announced it on Sunday. It sounded like they just had to iron out the contract, I guess, before they announced it, but kind of a cool moment. They released the audio from when Jeff Lurie told him, which is cool, but also a little weird to me.
It is weird. It was a little creepy.
And you feel like you're like, why did he know they were recording this?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure he gave his permission once it was out, but it was kind of funny because Jeff Lurie calls Nick Sirianni up and he's, "Hello." Like, "Hi, it's Jeff Lurie. I have something very important to ask you. Like, are you busy?" It's just like, what is going on here? It felt a little awkward listening to it. And then, I mean, I don't know how many people are down in Florida with Jeff Lurie, but you hear all these people cheering when Nick kind of accepts the job. Obviously, he's accepting the job. I guess they wouldn't have released it if he said no.
I need a few minutes to think about this, Jeff. What's the vacation?
Can I get 401?
Do you match the 401k?
What are the bennies? It was interesting. But it did make me wonder how many people are down there with, because you hear all these people cheering. And I mean, I guess
maybe it was like a laugh track, like in an old like 80s sitcom.
You ever watch a sitcom and just focus on the laugh track?
If I watch one now, like an old sitcom with it, it distracts me.
Yeah, it's really strange. The funniest thing about laugh tracks is that there's always a stray laugh at the end of it. So mm-hmm. you hear the whole group laugh, and then there's always like a stray, like there's that one last guy who's still laughing, who's inserted into it. But anyway, that might be a little off track. But
I had it on the list here. Laugh tracks. We wanted to get to it.
Talk about Gilligan's Island and laugh tracks. it was cool. I mean, it was cool to listen to, even though it was a little weird.
It was kind of interesting too. I found out he just happened to be in Florida. He was visiting some family he brought his family. It was after the Colts season, obviously. So they went to get some sun, and they were in Fort Lauderdale, which is a pretty short drive to Palm Beach. So when Jeff Lurie called him, he just, "Yeah, sure, I'll drive over." He drives over, has the interview, and then ends up getting the job. Kind of crazy how that worked out.
Yeah, I'll be right there. maybe he drove down there knowing that, you know, that Jeff was there. And if I'm nearby, maybe I have an advantage. It all came together pretty quickly, even though they got a late start. It didn't really seem to hurt them. I would love to know, and I'm sure one day we'll find out. I still think they were kind of prepared to give the job to Josh McDaniels, or at least offer it to him. And I mean, Sirianni was one of the last, if not the last. I think they interviewed one more person after him, right? But
Dennis Allen after him?
Yeah, Dennis Allen was after him. But I think they were ready to give it to McDaniels. I'm just kind of speculating, but I think Sirianni came in late, and I think you have an advantage when you come in at the end. And, you know,
possibly. And from what we've heard about Sirianni, he is like a really likable guy, and he's able to present himself in a way that we talked about this. Like, Jeff Lurie wants his head coach to present something with a plan. I'm sure McDaniels did that, which is why he was one of the finalists. But everything we've heard about Sirianni is he's a likable guy, and one of his brothers told me, he's like, I knew they would like him. Like, if you sit down with him, you're going to like him. You're going to like what he has to say. And he impressed him enough. You give him credit. You're right, though. I think it really came down to him or Josh McDaniels. And maybe Sirianni's just more likable than Josh McDaniels.
It's hard to be less likable than Josh McDaniels. No, I mean, I don't know Josh McDaniels, but just observing, you know, the league over the last 15, 20 years, I mean, he's never been a likable guy. And I wonder how much, I mean, there was a lot of pushback by fans. I mean, just from my Twitter, and my Twitter's probably not fair because I've always been a big Deuce guy, so my Twitter probably trends toward that. But my sense just from talking to people in the city was that everybody wanted Deuce, or a lot of people wanted Deuce. Nobody wanted McDaniels. And I they're aware of that stuff. I mean, I'm sure that they had a sense of what the fans wanted, and they're like, well, we're not going to hire Deuce, but we're not going to hire McDaniels. And this is kind of more down the middle, and we think people will like him once they get to know him, which I think is true. But it was an interesting dynamic with the three of them, because I think they were kind of the three. I think 99% of the opinions I read about any of the coaches were about those three. And they were all pretty extreme. Well, they weren't extreme with Sirianni, but they were extreme with the other two. I didn't get one tweet from anybody that wanted Josh McDaniels to be the head coach of this team. And I got a bunch who thought Deuce isn't really qualified, and that's certainly their opinion. But I would love to know the dynamic of what happened with Josh McDaniels, because I think at one point he was the favorite.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And when they sat down with Sirianni, I'm sure he brought them a plan. And we heard pretty early on that a big part of his plan was the coaching staff he was going to hire. And we kind of go back to 5 years ago, Doug Peterson, you know, he had been in the league for a while as a coach, but it had all been under Andy. So basically he had been around the same guys. Whereas Sirianni, he's coached in three places, but he's coached under a bunch of head coaches because he was kept on staff in Kansas City after that coach got fired. He was kept on staff in San Diego, LA after that coach was fired. So he's really been with a bunch of different coaching staffs, and now we're starting to see that influence. He's starting to put together his staff based on the guys he's worked with before.
Yeah, and I think the big message there is that this is his staff. It's not Howie's staff, and it's not Jeffrey's staff. And I never thought that they wanted to put a coach's staff together. I think they didn't like Doug's vision for the 2021 Eagles staff with Press and – Press being O coordinator and Andrew Briner being quarterbacks coach and Matt Burke being D coordinator. I don't think they wanted to pick the coaches. I think they wanted a better staff, which is their right. And it's Doug's right to say, no, I want these guys as my staff. That's where the philosophical differences come into play. But I think every Eagles fan should be reassured by the fact that these are Nick Sirianni's guys, and they're not Howie Roseman's guys or Jeff Lurie's guys. I'm sure he had to sell them on them, but it's clearly his staff.
Yeah, and I think it helps that we'll get to the individual guys, but a guy like Jonathan Gannon, there was interest around the league in him. It wasn't like he was the only guy and Sirianni wants to bring him in. But yeah, I look back at 2016, and I don't know if it wasn't that they didn't trust Doug. I think Doug just didn't have the contacts to put together a very good staff. And he ended up putting together a pretty good one with some help. But he had never worked with these guys. Like, he didn't even know Jim Schwartz. He knew Frank Reich, but they hadn't coached together. So this is a much different dynamic this year, at least with the names we know so far.
And he kept 9 of Chip's guys, including quality control guys. That's unprecedented. And, I think putting a staff together was not Doug's strength. I think he had a lot of strengths. That was not one of them. And I think more than not his strength, it was just something he wasn't really, I guess, committed to. I don't think he approached the staff building part of it, like, with maybe the eagerness that, I would be like, oh, wow. Like, if somebody said you're in charge of, putting staff together for a newspaper or for a website or something, I'd be like, I'd be exhaustive going through everybody I knew, everyone I didn't know, looking at resumes. I don't think Doug had that. I think he loves to coach. He loves to call plays. He loves offensive football. I think the staff building part of it wasn't his wheelhouse.
Sure. Let's go through some of these names. Obviously, Nick Sirianni at the top, and now you have Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator.
Don't you want to know if I'd hire you on my staff?
No, I don't want that answer. Because I have a feeling I know what it is. Jonathan Gannon,
the
Colts defensive backs coach, had some interest around the league. Certainly was a hot name. Eagles able to get him. What do you make of him?
Yeah, it's so hard to tell. And there's no negatives I could find. And I certainly looked. He was highly regarded. His players seemed to like him. The stuff you read about Xavier Rhodes certainly came over from Minnesota and had kind of a bounce back year. And as a free agent, kind of had a proof, and the Eagles could use a cornerback.
Not a lot of money there.
But Xavier Rhodes was a Pro Bowl guy with the Vikings, and his career had kind of, flattened out. And, he got a lot of credit for his, his rejuvenation in Indianapolis. So that's the kind of thing that takes notice, because that's real. I mean, that's concrete stuff. That's not just theoretical. This is his scheme, and this is what he likes to do. Certainly the Eagles – secondary has been an issue for a long time. And other than 17, they just haven't had good secondary. So from what I know, I think it's a solid hire. He's got experience in different places. And I think I like it. It's first defensive coordinator they've had. No, that's not true. But I like the hire from what I've seen.
What were you going to say?
Not nothing. It was something that wasn't accurate.
Okay. Interesting hire because the Colts have a good defense, and Matt Eberflus got some looks for head coaching job. I guess he's still technically in the race for the Texans job if they ever hire a head coach. Maybe
I think that's going to be the enemy or Leslie Frazier, I would think, at this point.
Yeah, maybe, but Eberflus apparently had a really good interview with them. They liked him. And the one thing we know, and I got a lot of questions about this, it's going to be a 4-3, I would imagine. That's what they ran in Indy, and that's what Gannon's background is. I think the coverages will be a little different, more of a cover 2 defense. I think it'll be a little more multiple than we saw under Jim Schwartz, which will be exciting. A little more aggressive too at times, not necessarily blitzing, but with the coverages. But we'll see. I mean, we're kind of going off of what the Colts have done, and Gannon's been an influence there, but he hasn't been the DC. I'm interested to see what his defense looks like and how much say he'll have in defensive personnel too, because we know Jim Schwartz had a major say in defensive personnel. Gannon doesn't have the resume, so I'm wondering if he's going to have the influence Schwartz had.
Yeah, I think that's a big question, and there's no way to answer it yet, but I think if you start seeing a bunch of Colts signing here, then you'll have your answer. But I think that's natural. You want to surround yourself with at least some familiar pieces, and they have some interesting free agents, but yeah, I mean, it'll be a 4-3, and the Eagles personnel is, and there's some coaches that'll come in and tailor the scheme to the personnel, but I think most guys are 4-3 guys or 3-4 guys. And
for the most part.
Yeah. So the personnel here is 4-3 personnel. I think it's going to work best. And I think that's what they'll be running.
Yeah. And I enjoy the 4-3.
Me too. I yeah.
Especially those passive 3-4s. You can have a good defense. To me, it's just not as much fun watching it.
Yeah, I always felt like 4-3 is a little more sound, unless you have really, really, like, incredible edge rushers, 15-sack type guys coming off the edge. I just – if you don't have that, why run a 3-4?
Yeah. So that is Jonathan Gannon. And it's interesting, the head coach, defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, all in their 30s, all pretty young guys.
They all look the same.
The Eagles, they do. A lot of tall, lanky white guys.
They look like they could all be cousins or like frat bros or something.
Yeah, which is another issue entirely that I don't know if we want to get into today. But
yeah,
Shane Steichen, the new offensive coordinator that was just reported Monday morning, comes from Los Angeles, the Chargers. He worked together with Sirianni for 4 years, from 14 to 17. After Sirianni left to go to the Colts, Steichen kept rising. He became the full-time offensive coordinator in 2020. Read up a bunch about this guy. Seems to be his strength is kind of during the week, and his play calling was questionable in 2020. The good news is my guess is Sirianni is going to be calling plays, so you're getting the good of Steichen without the bad.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Interesting. He was in Cleveland. His first NFL job was a quality control guy under Rob Chudzinski, who that would have been the year Joe Banner was in Cleveland. So there's a Joe Banner connection there to Shane Steichen. So I'll throw that out there. That doesn't mean anything, but I just, I find that I always look for those connections, and that was notable to me. Louisville guy, but yeah, young. Was he 35?
Yeah.
Very young staff. But I will say this, and I mean, I don't want to make a huge deal about this right now, but, you know, the Eagles have not had a black coordinator, I think, since Emmett Thomas. Is that right? Emmett Thomas was defensive coordinator.
You're probably right.
Under Ray, haven't had a black coach since Ray. You know, it's a little disappointing to me. I'd like to see. I mean, league-wide, this is an issue. Obviously, I don't know what the Texans are going to do. But, you know, you see qualified coaches. And, again, I'm not saying these guys are not qualified. I'm not saying they're not good coaches. But this has been a very white, you know, very white staff for 25 years. And the league is, you know, there's lip service about, you know, the Rooney Rule, which is doesn't really accomplish anything. You know, it's disappointing to me. You'd like to see a little more diversity, and black head coaches aren't getting the opportunities. Deuce, I mean, for Deuce to not even be a coordinator yet at this point in his career, not even get an interview for a coordinator job, I mean, I don't know where he'll end up and when he'll end up doing this year, but it's just disappointing.
Yeah, and we'll see what the Texans do. You would hope Bieniemy or Leslie Frazier get that job, but yeah, I don't know. And Jeffrey Lurie's spoken pretty openly about, you know, at the beginning of this coaching search that it was on the forefront of his mind. And he interviewed a few black candidates, Deuce and Todd Bowles, Gerard Mayo. But it doesn't seem like maybe Deuce was a finalist, but the other two didn't seem like finalists.
He interviewed Curtis Modkins, who's black for the offensive coordinator job. But
another tall, lanky white guy, Kevin Petullo, pass game coordinator. People are kind of worried about having a pass game coordinator because, and I understand this is a legitimate fear, the too many cooks theory, and we saw with the Eagles last year. That staff was never cohesive. It was kind of a mess. And now you have a pass game coordinator, a position you don't really need. I mean, we've seen plenty of offenses without a pass game coordinator. What do you make of this, and can it work?
Yeah, I think it comes down to – I don't care about the titles. I mean, the titles to me aren't really the issue. I care about whether the guy's a good coach or not. And I still don't think that the Eagles' problem this past year was the titles. I think it was who the coaches were. And there might have been too many of them, but you can give guys whatever title you want. It's how they work together, what ideas they have, how much they listen to each other, how much the head coach listens. So the fact that they have a passing game, I mean, a lot of teams have pass game coordinators. I don't know exactly how many, but it's not uncommon. Every team has a different structure. I was listening to Trent Baalke's interview when he was named GM of the Jaguars. And not that I'm a big Trent Baalke fan, but he was talking about Tom Gamble, who the former Eagles executive, whose dad was Harry Gamble, Eagles president for 10 years and former Penn football coach for a long time. And somebody asked him what Tom Gamble's title would be in Jacksonville. And he said, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. We'll call him something, but, you know, director something, but it doesn't matter. I just want good people in the building. And I mean, that, I think that's what it comes down to. If you have good people, you can call them whatever you want. The key is communication, teaching, respect, trust. And I think those are things that they, on the offensive staff, they just didn't have last year.
I will add, though, that I think you need kind of defined roles, because I think the title might not matter, but the role that comes with that title is important to me, because
absolutely.
I think last year they got in this thing where they were like, yeah, Rich Scangarello has good ideas. Andrew Brunner has good ideas. Let's get him in the building and then we'll figure out what the heck they're going to do. And I don't think that's good enough. I think you have to have, like, if Kevin Petullo is your pass game coordinator, he has to have a specific role during the week on game day, and you have to define that early. Otherwise, you're in this weird limbo like they were last year where, you know, Rich Scangarello is talking to Carson Wentz, Marty Morningweg's talking to Jalen Hurts, and they're getting different messages. And I think that's where it becomes a mess. But as long as there's a power structure set up with defined roles for these coaches, then I think it can work.
Yeah, and I think when you have the GM and owner bringing in some coaches and the head coach has his guys, it's just not a healthy – I mean, how are they going to work together? And I think, that's what you had last year. And I think that, like we said earlier, I don't think that's going to be an issue now. I mean, these are all Nick Sirianni's guys, and it's his coaching staff.
You ever have a worlds colliding moment where, like, you'll be hanging out with one group of friends and then you see another group of friends and now they're like,
I don't have any friends.
And now they're like, and, like, if you had some work friends, and then, like, for me, I have like work friends and childhood friends, and then they come together and it's kind of a weird situation. I wonder if that's how Nick Sirianni is going to feel about his coaches from Indy and his coaches from the Chargers. Like, once they get in the same room, is it going to be weird for him?
I have a very close friend that lives in New York, and I found out another very close friend of mine lived a block away from them. And now they never met each other. They never knew each other, but I like suggested that I thought maybe they could be friends, and now they're like best pals. So it's kind of like that.
Yeah. You hope it works out. What if there's like a Colts Chargers division?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen.
Either.
I don't think that's going to happen unless, no, I don't think that'll happen. But no, it's interesting that, I just think the whole, I'm always been fascinated with staff building. I just think it's, I was looking at Andy's initial staff. We talk a lot about a staff in 99, and he didn't know any of those guys. You know, he didn't, and he got them all from different places. He had never worked with them. It's really interesting to look back. It might actually be an interesting story to do. I mean, Leslie Frazier was at a Division II school called Trinity. And, I mean, have you ever heard of Trinity? I don't even know if it's still college anymore. The Eagles actually had a receiver that went there. Carl Hankton, I believe, was the guy. But I don't know how to remember that. But You know, how do you find a guy at Trinity? And he had just, you know, he had somebody had said something good about him, and he started researching him, and he brought him in, and he liked him, and he liked his ideas. And, you know, now Leslie Frazier might be a head coach, and he's a hell of a defensive coordinator, I think. You never know, I mean, about a staff. I mean, you really just never know. And, you know, what looks like a good staff and what looks like a bad staff could be a great staff. I mean, Chip Kelly, I never really thought much about Chip Kelly's staff until they were Doug's staff. You know, and some of them were still good coaches. Wow, Justin Peele's actually a pretty good coach.
Yeah.
So
speaking of Justin Peele, he is now with Atlanta. He's their new tight ends coach. He's one guy who won't be returning. One guy who is returning, and this is a big one, Jeff Stoutland. It was reported a while back that Alabama wanted him to return, and then that job went away once they hired Doug Marrone. This is a big deal, getting Jeff Stoutland back. Some consistency for that O-line. He's been a tremendous position coach during his 8 years here.
Yeah, and I'm just speculating, but it can't hurt Jason Kelsey's chances of returning, because at 33 and going into year 12. I'm not sure how much, you know, he's interested in, you know, having a new position coach and learning new schemes. And so I think having that continuity, having a thread of continuity on any coach's staff is huge. And Stoutland, for Jordan Mulata's development, it would be really tough for him after learning the game of football from Jeff Stoutland and getting to the point he is now, for him to continue that growth as a player would be a lot harder without Jeff Stoutland. But all these
guys, you can throw Andre Dillard in that mix too. If you're ever going to get something out of Andre Dillard, it would probably help to have Stout around.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm sure all those guys are so happy. Lane and Brandon and Kelsey. He's just a good coach. And you know, even though they gave up 1,000 sacks this year, but he did an incredible job. I mean, he was out there, the guys that he was playing, whether it was Matt Pryor or Brent Toth or, I mean, Sue Opita.
Jamon Brown.
He had to play Jamon Brown one game. You know, Nate Herbig was like their second most consistent player, and guys are undrafted. I thought he did an incredible job this year.
You know, Nate Herbig played the second most snaps of any offensive player this year.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
He played more than Carson.
Yeah.
Really? I would have guessed he was third. But, yeah, because he missed a couple games. But, yeah, I mean, Kelsey's the only offensive guy to start more than 12 games, right, I believe?
Yep.
Yeah. Insane. Which is crazy.
The last name that we know so far, Tracy Rocker, defensive line. This is just as interesting for the departure as it is for Tracy Rocker. It means that Matt Burke not returning, at least not returning as a defensive line coach. I mean, he was a guy who had Doug stayed on staff, would have been the defensive coordinator, and now he's probably out.
It looks that way, which is fine with me. But I mean, I like Matt, but I'm not sure you need him here.
D-line's pretty good.
What's that?
D-line wasn't a problem. And
no, that's true. That's true. I mean, I would have had a problem if he was still here. I guess I'm just thinking that the more new faces you can have, the better. But I know the players really like Matt Burke, and the D-line did, for the most part, play really well.
We talk about the shuffling at wide receiver coach. I mean, this is the D-line coach now has really been shuffled in the past few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chris Wilson, Philip Daniels, Matt Burke, Tracy. I mean,
yeah, it's four years.
Yeah, they're going through them now.
Wide receiver is going to be 7 and 7 years.
Unless more heads back, which I think is possible.
It is possible.
But you would think an offensive head coach would want to bring in his own receivers coach.
Yeah, you would think so. That'll be an interesting – I mean, there's still some interesting hires, all the position coaches other than Tracy. Tracy Rocker's an interesting guy. One of the greatest college defensive linemen ever. He was the Lombardi Trophy winner. He was the, I guess at Auburn, he was the Outland Trophy winner, which goes to the top line, interior lineman on either side of the ball in college football. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame, but he didn't do anything in the NFL. He was drafted in the third round by Washington. He played a year and a half and was out of the league, and he went right into coaching, starting at his high school at Auburn High School, which is down the street from Auburn University. And he's been in a bunch of places, but he's got a great reputation as a technician. And, you know, it's an interesting hire because the Eagles D-line is, you know, older guys, a lot of older guys. But I think we don't know if you know, Derek Barnett will even be here. But certainly that would be a huge part of any D-line's coach's job if Barnett is here, is getting him to that next level. Maybe Rocker could do that. But an interesting guy. And he left South Carolina for a job at Auburn like 2 weeks ago. And I'm not sure how that works, if he had a clause in his contract that if he got an NFL offer, he could leave, or if there's a buyout. But he left Auburn faster than I think Josh McDaniels left the Colts.
Do you remember when Doug put his staff together and the way we found out Doug Peterson was the head coach of the Eagles? Ken Flagel had accepted the defensive coordinator position at UTEP, and it was the day of the press conference, and he basically told Doug, like, Doug, I need to know, because if they introduce me here, I'm not coming. Like, I'm not gonna stand up here, like, answer questions and then leave. So Doug called him back that day and said, I got the job. I want you to be the linebackers coach. And then they canceled the press conference to announce him as defensive coordinator. And it got out that he had been hired for the Eagles. And then, like, that word got out and everyone's like, what's the connection? What's the connection to Flagel?
I remember that. I remember calling the sports info office out there and trying to find out what was going on. And it didn't come from like Schefter or any of those guys. It was,
I think they announced it like to the UTEP reporters who were waiting for a press conference, like, oh, the DC, actually, he's not the DC anymore. He just took a job with the Eagles, and they don't care. What the heck did they care about? The Eagles had to, oh, the DC is gone. And then it sent Philly in a panic trying to figure out. And he had a connection to another, I forget who it was at this point, but he had a connection to another head coaching candidate. So everyone thought it was someone else for a split second.
Yeah. That was interesting. That's always fun when that stuff happens, trying to sort it out. But it's an interesting name. We'll see. You know, who knows? But I like the name.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
One guy who won't be here, Deuce Staley. John Clark, our John Clark, yesterday reported that Deuce is asking out of his contract, which makes sense. I mean, and we've talked about this a while back. You know, if Deuce didn't get this head coaching job, it's time to move on, because the upward growth isn't here. It's just not here for him. So it's kind of a shame that it ends like this, but he's got to move on.
Yeah, and it's sad, and I think he deserved better. Not a commentary on Nick Sirianni or anybody else, but I don't know what else Deuce could have done in his time here to deserve this job. I wasn't in there when he interviewed. I can't imagine Deuce is not a terrific interview after, you know, knowing him for 24 years. Yeah, I just hope he gets the chance he deserves. And I was looking through it. It's incredible. Deuce has either played with or coached with 9 current NFL head coaches, which is – it's crazy. You know, I mean, Sean Payton. He, you know, Sean Payton was on Ray Rhodes' staff, John Gruden, when Deuce was playing. So all those guys, all the Andy coaching tree guys, You know, he coached with Matt Nagy. I mean, there's so many guys that he's got a background with. So he'll get a job. And, you know, I hope it's – I mean, it'll probably be running backs, but I hope it's – I hope he gets an OC coordinator job soon. I'd love to see what he could do with it. I'm sick of the narrative that he's just a running back. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't know the passing game. Deuce knows the passing game. Deuce studies. I mean, he studied the Mike Leach offense. You talking about passing game. Deuce studies blocking schemes, and he knows all that stuff. He could do the job. It just wasn't going to happen here. I mean, I don't blame him for leaving. I don't know what role Nick, if any, Nick Sirianni would have had for Deuce. I would think he would have been happy to have him back as his running backs coach. I don't know that. Makes sense.
I think it'd be a tough situation, though.
It would be a tough situation. That's why I think it's best for everyone that he moves on. Yeah, I just wish him luck. And, you know, it was just, it's just unfortunate bunch of circumstances, but he'll do well wherever he goes.
Yeah, and you hope he gets that chance. I know the Bears had some reported interest in him, Matt Nagy. I mean, he certainly knows enough people around the league that you would hope he gets his shot. The cool thing about Deuce to me was that, and we talked about this on a previous pod, but how much support he got, not just from offensive players and running backs, but, I mean, when you have a guy like Malcolm Jenkins tweeting it out, Brandon Graham kind of throw, and look, obviously they like the guy they know, but I think that means a lot. I think people notice that. And that's an important part of being a head coach, and it gets overlooked way too often.
Yeah. It just occurred to me that if Eric Bieniemy gets the Texans job and Mike Kafka becomes – I mean, he's quarterbacks, but there could be an opening for Deuce in KC. Who knows? Doing something. You know, he's coached with Andy. He played for Andy. Andy thinks a lot of him. But as far as – I know there's people tweeting me saying there's going to be a revolt in the locker room because Deuce didn't get the job, and that's not how it works. I mean, players – have a job to do, and there's a lot of money at stake, and nobody's going to go out and say, I'm not going to play hard because Deuce isn't my coach. It doesn't work that way. But I'm sure that there's guys in that locker room that are really disappointed.
Yeah. And I think they should be, they wanted to see Deuce get that job, but by all accounts, Nick Sirianni is the type of coach that players are going to like. And I think that'll kind of change pretty quickly once they meet him and get in the same room as him.
No doubt. Hey, Eagles fans, it's time to look forward to a dream vacation. Philadelphia Eagles fan cruise tickets are selling fast. The ship sails March of 2022 for 7 days and nights with Eagles fans and only Eagles fans. Book your tickets now at PhiladelphiaEaglesCruise.com. And all month long, NBC Sports presents Men's Health and Sports Headstrong, a series about men's health told through powerful stories involving the athletes that we love. Learn more on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com/headstrong.
Some front office news. John Dorsey expected to head to Detroit and take a position in their front office scouting department. Kind of disappointing for a lot of Eagles fans who I think hoped he would stick around in some kind of full-time capacity to help Howie Roseman and the scouting staff with particularly the draft and also pro scouting. It's tough to say how big of a loss this is because we don't really know exactly what he did, but it's a loss maybe for the future because you won't have that scouting mind in the building.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the criticisms of John Dorsey at his previous stops in Cleveland and KC weren't his talent evaluation. They were his ability to work with others and communicate and that kind of stuff. And I think he's a really good talent evaluator. But, again, I mean, he was a consultant here. And there's a lot of people between him and when you get up to Howie. And if they kept him, I mean, to compete with what he was offered, they would have had to make him basically, you know, basically Howie or close to it. And they couldn't do that. I mean, that would, you know, they weren't going to, I mean, they were never going to do that. They were never going to give him that kind of responsibility and that kind of say on personnel. he would have bypassed a bunch of people like Andy Weidel and, you know, I guess Jeremiah Washburn. There's a lot of people between a consultant and the GM. So unless they were prepared to replace Howie with John Dorsey, and I think we know after talking to Jeffrey that that's not going to happen. Not that it wouldn't have been a good idea. I wouldn't have had a problem with it, but they weren't going to do it.
Perfect world, co-GMs, right?
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
You make them one person with the salary cap acumen and the personnel decisions and the drafting, and you just make that one person and you have a pretty good GM.
Well, I'll tell you what, in a perfect world, that would be a hell of a matchup, because I think Howie's strengths and John Dorsey's strengths really complement each other. But it would never work, but it would, I think you'd really have yourself covered if you could get Howie to say, you know what, we haven't drafted well, I'm going to step back and just handle, you know, other stuff. Like, you know, we've talked about this 1,000 times, but Howie doesn't want to do that.
Yeah. I don't think kind of the idea with Joe Douglas at a certain point, but Howie obviously retained final say. And look, Joe's track record here wasn't great either, but that was kind of the idea with Joe. And now I guess to a lesser extent, Andy Weidel, but yeah. It was intriguing when John Dorsey came here.
It was. I mean, it was just good having him in the building. And, you know, hopefully his, you know, I think we'll hear on draft day, you know, this is a guy John Dorsey really liked. I think, you know, well.
I don't know if we'll hear that.
No, I think we will. I think we will. I think, you know, he did a lot of legwork during his time here. He basically was scouting, you know, draft and pro personnel. So maybe we won't hear it directly, but I think we'll hear it. That was a guy Dorsey really liked. And, you know, I mean, Howie will give credit to other people. I'm not sure how genuine it is, but he will do it. That's not fair, but we'll see. But I think there was value in having him here. Obviously, it would have been a lot more value keeping him.
My favorite Howie, and this is off the rails, but I apologize. My favorite Howie draft story was the one he told us after they drafted Derek Barnett. And he said he was sitting in his office and Joe Douglas walked in and started talking about Derek Barnett and Howie had a single piece of paper, and all on the piece of paper, he had written the name Derek Barnett. And he tried to show this, like, how in lockstep they were. And I walked away from that press conference thinking, everyone knows who Derek Barnett is. He just broke Reggie White's sack record at Tennessee. It's not like you found some diamond in the rough here. That story always cracked me up.
Yeah, now he doesn't even have as many sacks as Reggie had in his best year. But that's another story. Didn't he have the actual piece of paper didn't he hold it up that said?
No, I don't think so.
I think he did. I think he held up. He's like, I still have that piece of paper. I thought he held it up.
I think you've changed this story in your mind in the last 4 years.
I'm going to look that up. Speaking of front office and Howie, just a quick aside, both Super Bowl, and I mean, you can use this as a segue, I'm sure you will. Both Super Bowl GMs are guys who worked with Howie and guys who were here. Brett Veach, who's maybe the best GM in the business at this point, from the Chiefs. Brett started as an intern here and worked his way up. And then Andy, when Andy left in 2012, he took Brett Veach with him. And then he actually replaced John Dorsey as GM of the Chiefs. And then Jason Light, who's bounced around. He's been with a bunch of teams, but Jason Light's done a great job. He's been with Tampa for a while now. He was here with Brett Veach. In fact, when Brett Veach was named GM, one of the people he thanked was Jason Light for, you know, his start in scouting. Jason Light has done a really good job. So the two GMs of the Super Bowl teams are both from the Howie Roseman GM tree. How about that?
Well, they have five more in staff. So
factory, I'm telling you.
It is. There are plenty of Super Bowl connections with the Eagles. Obviously, the big one is Andy, but Brett Veach and Todd Bowles coached a heck of a game on Sunday to get the Bucks to the Super Bowl. There were a bunch. Shady McCoy might end up with a second ring in 2 years without playing.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine if LeSean McCoy has two rings, neither one with the Eagles or the Bills, the two teams he spent 99% of his career with. Kenyon Barner on the Bucks. yeah, there's a lot of connections and you know, a lot of Bruce Arians staff is guys that he, I think Kevin Ross and Todd McNair, two South Jersey guys, are on his staff, both played for him at Temple, as did Todd Bowles, Kevin Ross from Paulsboro and Todd McNair from Pensauken. And Mike Caldwell, former Eagles linebacker, is on that staff, inside linebackers coach, which is weird because he was an outside linebacker. Chris Boniel's on that staff.
Is he really?
The guy whose name comes up every time we talk about the worst free agents in Eagles history.
Is he a pure kicker coach?
He's their defensive line coach. No, he's like their kicking coach or special teams assistant or something like that.
I think teams should have a kicking coach.
Absolutely. Every time we ask Fip about the kicker, he's like, well, I'm not a kicking coach. Well, then get one.
Yeah, they should have one. Teams should definitely have a kicking coach.
Yeah.
Because the special teams coach, it's too broad. And they're like, yeah.
I've always said that. And, I mean, Harbs has had Randy Brown down there. That's what he does. He's a kicking coach.
Yeah, it's worthwhile. What did you make of the championship games?
Yeah, it was a fun day. It's my favorite day. And, you know, my old boss at the Burlington County Times, Harvey Melman. You ever meet Harvey?
I know Harvey.
Yeah. He used to always have a party at his house in Levittown on AFC-NFC championship game day. It was the best day because, like, we would get there at 10. The grill would be going at 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, you just spend the day there. I think the games are earlier back there. I mean, it's just it's such a great day. To me, it's better than Super Bowl day, right? Which is so much hype and build up and waiting for the game. But it's my favorite. Maybe other than the first couple of days of the NCAA tournament, maybe opening day of baseball season, it's really my favorite sports day of the year. Burlington County Open Track Championships is up there. I thought the one thing we learned was that you got to be aggressive in this game. You're not going to go to the Super Bowl kicking field goals. And, you know, I'm obviously the Matt LaFleur one was horrific, but I mean, I'm friends with Sean McDermott, but he was too passive as well. You're not going to beat Pat Mahomes or Tom Brady kicking field goals. And especially in those situations, Big Red's there again. Mahomes, I mean, and Tony Romo to me is the best color analyst ever. I mean, I just, you know, listening to him it's like, you know, I'm not going to say that, but it's he's so insightful. And you just learn something every day from him. And, he made the point that, what's his name said, you know, he's on his way to being an all-time great. Tony Romo's like, he's there. I mean, if he retired today, he's in the Hall of Fame, which is probably true. Maybe not literally, but gosh, he's like 19th in NFL history in postseason touchdown passes. And he's 25. He's turned 25. What Mahomes does it's astonishing. So it's a great matchup. I think you'll hear a lot about Mahomes versus Brady over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I think that might be a storyline headed into
the But, you know, I was concerned about him because of not just the concussion, but the turf toe. That's a bad injury. But he was able to kind of tailor his game a little. He didn't run as much. The throws he makes across his body, it's just incredible to watch. And I'll tell you what, Spags called a really good game, I thought. I thought Spags did a good job. Josh Allen never got into a rhythm. You know, he did run a couple times, but he ran a lot, actually, but he had to. Their corners played well. Spags has made such a difference on that team because that was like one of the worst defenses in the league before he got there. The whole Packers thing, I still can't believe. I mean, that's one of the worst calls I've ever seen.
And it wasn't just that call. I mean, they had so many chances even before that to win. If Tampa Bay was trying, it felt like they were trying to lose that game. Brady threw all those picks. And the Packers were, I think we both picked them to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we did.
And they had a great chance to beat Tampa Bay, and they couldn't get it done. That call from Matt LaFleur, though, why?
And his whole thing is, like, what's his slogan, you know, always on the gas, never on the brakes or something. You know, it's like, I mean, it's so out of character for him. I think guys start coaching differently in the playoffs sometimes, and it's a mistake.
You're going to rely on Tom Brady to throw another pick?
Yeah. It was – and even if you don't get it, even if you don't get it on fourth down, you're no worse off than if you – you know, because now yeah, at least they're starting out on the whatever it would have been, the 4, 5, 6 yard line, the 8 yard line. And you still have to stop them. So I don't know. I didn't get it. I
tweeted out. If I'm Nick Sirianni, I'm texting Jeff Lurie being like, I'd go for that.
Yeah. And I tweeted out as soon as it happened, Matt LaFleur might be available to, interview for the Eagles offensive coordinator job tomorrow. And people thought I was serious. he's not getting fired over this, but it's bad. And I mean, Aaron Rodgers what did he say? He's like, I probably should have tried to run it in on third down, but I thought we were in four down territory. I was surprised.
There were so many baffling decisions.
Yeah.
In that game. And then there was the returner from Tampa Bay who slid before the 2 minute warning.
Yeah.
These are people in the highest positions in the league, and they're screwing up these game situations. When we're talking about adding all these coaches, maybe it's a good idea to just have a really smart guy in charge of game time situations.
You just have his title could be assistant coach, smart guy.
Yeah. Smart guy, like clock guru, like just know someone to know the situation, and to be like
Tony Romo.
Tony Romo would be great.
He'd be the best at it.
He'd have to pay him like a head coach to do that.
$1 million a year, but your clock management would be spot on.
Yeah, it just baffles me that some people in these positions, and I know there's a lot of pressure. I don't think I could do it, but if you're this is your job. This is game situations. You have to be ready for it. And sometimes it's just baffling.
And that's the thing about Romo. He knows before the situation arises what to do. And that's hard. I mean, that is literally – that's what chess is, like thinking three moves ahead. And if you can't do that, you can't make that decision when the situation arises. You can say – because that play clock is running. So you can't say, "Oh, what should we do here?"
If you're like the defensive offensive coordinator, you have to call a play too. You need time to call the play.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to know the second. It's like Andy last week on that fourth down. I mean, he knew as soon as fourth and one, he knew what they were doing. There's no hesitation, and that's where he's shown so much growth. Because I don't know if during his years here, I'm not sure he's as decisive.
Delay of game.
Yeah, timeout, delay a game, but who knows? Because that was not – I mean, let's be honest. That was his weakness when he was here, and he's a lot better at it now. I mean, he's had 22 years of practice, but, I think it's almost – I would even say it's a strength of his now,
Yeah.
I mean, he's just gotten so much better. It was hard to watch that game because, I mean, I've known Andy and Sean for 20 years each. And Sean's such a good dude. He's had a great year, but he did not coach a good game. He just didn't. And Andy was Andy's going to his third Super Bowl. He's now fourth all time in postseason wins. And I'll tell you what, I was looking at this. I don't know how much longer he wants to coach. And we can talk more about this later. But I mean, he could end up second to Belichick all time in playoff wins, as long as Mahomes.
He can stack some trophies here too.
He can stack some trophies. If he's got that kid healthy, why retire?
Yeah. No, you're right. We'll be back with you guys later in the week on Eagle Eye. If you enjoy the podcast, do us a favor, rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching on YouTube, do me a favor and click the subscribe button. Now you may speak, Ruby. Do not interrupt me. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. I know a lot of people ask me this. They have not scheduled a presser yet with Nick Sirianni. I would think it'd be coming, I would think Tuesday or Wednesday. We don't know, but we will do a pod after that, I would think, after we talk to him and get to know him. We'll we'll do another pod and we'll rip them apart.
We'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for listening.